This is a podcast from WILL AM 580. To support our station, please visit www.willpledge.org. That's www.willpledge.org.
This is the AM 580 News Daily Podcast for Tuesday, January 2nd, 2007. I'm Jeff Bossert. Coming up, Amy Guida will have this week's edition of Legal Issues in the News and a look at your AM 580 weather forecast for Champaign-Urbana, but first, today's news. Central Illinois smokers will have fewer places to light up in 2007. Smoking bans took effect yesterday in Urbana bars and virtually all indoor public places in the Bloomington-Normal area, and more are coming. A similar ban will take effect January 31st for Champaign's bars and restaurants. Urbana's restaurants and workplaces, except for bars, became smoke-free last August 1st. Meanwhile, a Danville Ordinance subcommittee this week will begin discussing a possible smoking ban of its own. The bans are similar to those enacted in more than 30 other Illinois cities and towns, including Chicago and Springfield. Some smokers are upset, but others say the danger of secondhand smoke justifies the bans. Urbana Mayor Laurel Prossing notes that the bans are being done successfully in several cities around the world. Visiting academic professionals at the University of Illinois vote this month on their first-ever labor contract. AM 580's Jim Meadows reports.
Visiting academic professionals work at a variety of campus jobs on short-term contracts. Like regular academic professionals at the Urbana-Champaign campus, they've never had a collective bargaining agreement. But nearly 2 years after formation of a union, negotiators reached a tentative agreement last month, and union members will vote on it by mail. Association of Academic Professionals Chief Negotiator Alan Belansky says the three-year agreement includes pay raises retroactive to the start of the school year.
We're strongly advocating that members vote to ratify the contract. We basically have, working for the university, a good deal, and we just wanted to sort of solidify some of that in a contract so we just don't have to worry about it.
Belansky says informational meetings about the contract proposal will be held this week and next. The first two are Thursday at noon at the Digital Computer Lab and Friday at noon at Turner Hall. Results of the mail-in voting will be announced January 15th. The U of I Board of Trustees must also ratify the contract. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
Chicago police say the number of homicides in the city increased slightly in 2006 after 3 years of declines. Police counted 466 Chicago slayings last year. That's about a 4% increase over the 447 in 2005 that marked a 40-year low. Police Superintendent Philip Klein says gang conflicts, including a drug turf dispute on the city's west side that claimed 19 lives, largely account for the increase. He says one of the city's biggest challenges is dealing with thousands of ex-convicts who are paroled and rejoin the narcotics trade each year. Klein says he's troubled by the 2006 increase, but he's encouraged by slayings remaining under 500 and by continued decreases in other serious crime categories. The new year has just begun, but authorities say Peoria already has its first homicide. Two men were shot in the driveway of a Peoria home around 9 last night. An 18-year-old was shot in the face while the other was grazed in the chest. The 18-year-old was pronounced dead at OSF St. Francis Medical Center. Peoria County Coroner John Ingersoll isn't releasing his name pending notification of relatives. A Republican task force says changes are needed at the state agency that controls hospital construction. Sean Crawford has that story.
After months of hearings, the task force found the Health Facilities Planning Board in need of a makeover. The board decides whether many health-related construction projects can move forward, whether it's a new care unit or a parking garage. The board was created to limit unnecessary projects that many perceive to raise the cost of health care. But Republican Senator Dale Ryder of Mattoon says it often goes too far.
The Health Facilities Planning Board is an overly bureaucratic, cumbersome process that errs on the side of saying we don't want to develop our healthcare facilities in the 21st century.
Ryder and other members of the task force say the board should have stricter standards for denying projects. Other recommendations include identifying high-growth areas of the state and expanding board membership. The board came under scrutiny in the past few years when federal prosecutors alleged influence peddling when it came to certain projects. The Democratic governor replaced board members and made other reforms, but the task force says more needs to be done. I'm Sean Crawford.
Veterans groups say they're finding it tough to recruit the nation's youngest combat veterans, those men and women who fought in the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. The Columbus American Legion Post in Indiana has about 600 members, but less than 2% are exclusively veterans of the conflicts since the 1991 Persian Gulf War, and two of Columbus's AMVETS posts have no younger members. But veteran group officials are hopeful that younger veterans will eventually join up. Larry Dernill is the acting director of the Columbus area's AMVETS posts. He predicts that veterans of the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan will eventually join a veterans group because they'll want to tell their war stories to fellow veterans who understand their combat experience. For the latest newscast online, go to wyol.uiuc.edu/news. This is the AM 580 News Daily Podcast. I'm Jeff Bossert. There's a lawsuit pending against a fast food restaurant brought by a woman killed by a man who police say was a former restaurant employee. Commentator Amy Guida explains that employers can be held liable for employees' criminal acts through a case of action known as negligent hiring. Here's this week's edition of Legal Issues in the News.
Emails are flying fast and furious as I write this. Those on a listserv can't agree whether a person's criminal history is relevant in a certain hiring context, especially when criminal charges are only pending. The question ultimately comes down to this. Would you want to know whether a potential employee has a criminal record or has been arrested recently? Now, sure, those on my listserv are arguing only about those who come to neighborhood doors uninvited looking for yard work. But the question is much bigger than that, really. Consider how much you might depend on a security guard or a school bus driver or even a hotel maid. If you're like me, you assume that those people have been thoroughly vetted before the job is offered to them. You assume that the person hired has no criminal record, especially for job-relevant crimes. But employees aren't always investigated in that way. That becomes clear when you read some of the thousands of cases involving a legal cause of action known as negligent hiring. Negligent hiring creates liability for employers when they hire someone they know or should know is dangerous and someone gets hurt. It's one of the claims in a lawsuit brought by the family of a woman killed in a fast food restaurant outside Chicago. Police charged a former employee with that crime. Here's the way negligent hiring is defined. A person conducting an activity through servants or other agents is subject to liability for harm if he is negligent or reckless in the employment of improper persons or instrumentalities in work involving risk of harm to others. The law notes the potential employees with reckless or vicious dispositions, incompetence, unskillfulness, or even thoughtlessness or playfulness could create an undue risk to others. If someone's hurt, the employer will be held liable if he or she didn't take the right precautions. But, as one court put it, it's only when an employee has a particular unfitness for the position and therefore causes a particular danger of harm that negligent hiring is an appropriate claim. If there's no relevant criminal history, for example, there's no liability on the part of the employer. With that sort of rule, it's tough for a plaintiff to win a negligent hiring case. If, using an Illinois real-life example, a cook gets into a fistfight at a restaurant, but that cook had nothing in his background to show that he had propensity for violence other than membership in a street gang, the restaurant won't be liable. But if, as another Illinois example, an apartment security guard has a criminal history and the apartment manager hires him anyway without checking, it's at least a jury question whether the employer should be held liable for a sexual assault in an apartment by that security guard. The public policy argument here is that we need to keep innocent customers and other dependents safe, but at the same time give those who've served their time the chance to redeem themselves. The criminal past has to be pretty darn related to the job for that reason. So yes, even courts acknowledge that criminal history is relevant in certain situations. And as a special note to potential employers, the liability continues even after the hire. Negligent training and negligent retention are related torts in many states. I'm Amy Guida.
Amy Guida is an assistant professor of journalism and law at the University of Illinois. In the forecast for East Central Illinois, mostly sunny and mild today with a high around 50. Clear and cool tonight. Some fog expected early in the morning tomorrow. The low near 28 overnight. Partly cloudy and mild tomorrow. The high 51 degrees. This has been the AM 580 News Daily Podcast for Tuesday, January 2nd. You can find podcasts of Focus 580, the afternoon magazine, agricultural programming, as well as other helpful information at our website, wiol.uiuc.edu. I'm Jeff Bossert, AM 580 News.